do you want?
Tell me a story.
Hmm? No, no. It's all right. You did far better with that question than I did.
It is said that in every age, there is one singular event that forever changes the world around us. A nexus, if you will.
It is said that the future is always born in pain. The history of war is the history of pain. If we are wise, what is born of that pain matures into the promise of a better world, because we learn that we can no longer afford the mistakes of the past.
But in the pain of that war, a future was born. A future that would one day have a name whispered on 100 worlds. A final refuge for dreams. And our last, best hope for peace. Babylon 5.
To the future, my old friend.
Prepare to jump to normal space?
The year is 2245. Earth battles 100 alien planets in the rush to conquer space. But it's not a perfect world. Humans are the bad guys.
Fire at will, I repeat. Fire!
Watch In the Beginning, the first ever full-length Babylon 5 movie. See the two-hour world premiere Sunday, January 4th at 8. And don't miss the series starting Monday the 5th, exclusively on TNT.
You have transmissions holding.
Batch incoming signal. Full audio and video decode.
Purple files accessed.
What you are about to see has never been shown to anyone outside the Grey Council.
Welcome back to Gray 17, a Babylon 5 podcast, a part of the Front Room Network and NPR Illinois Community Voices. We're a group of newbies watching Babylon 5 for the very first time, and a group of first ones who are watching Babylon 5 for the umpteenth time. And we are here today to discuss the first TNT movie shown, but the second TNT movie produced, In the Beginning. I'm Scott, and with me is...
What?
Justin.
Emily.
Kevin.
Mike.
It's a me! Fucking Jesse.
Yay! Jesse's here. Nicole is somewhere on I-55, and she'll be back next week. She's somewhere on I-55, where we don't entirely know. But we are here again to talk about, in between Season 4 and Season 5, there was on TNT, because Babylon 5 moved from the PTN network over to the TNT network during this time, a movie that was created to act as a, basically a second pilot. So how this worked was TNT aired In the Beginning first. That was the first thing they showed about B5 on the network. Then they showed The Gathering. And then for several weeks, Monday through Friday, they showed the entire series up until the end of Season 4. And then they started showing new episodes with Season 5. So that's why we've put In the Beginning right here between Season 4 and Season 5. Before we start talking about it, just a reminder to check all the social media links down below. We're active on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We also have our Discord for our Patreon members. And thank you very much to our Grey Council members, which are listed as the producers down below. You really absolutely do help the show grow, and we really appreciate it. And if you can, also, as you're clicking all those links, be sure to leave us a review. You can leave us a review on Apple, Audible, or Spotify. Apple's the best place to do. And we had a couple new reviews come in, guys. We had another one-star review come in from our good buddy Rick, because I guess he has way too much time on his hands. But we also got a five-star from Mikey T1979. Mikey is from the United Kingdom. And Mikey says, Gray 17... the best B5 podcast around. So I've recently binge listened to your podcast. I wasn't sure at first, but I love the format of the show using newbies and first ones to review the episodes. In fact, that the newbies weren't sure about the show to start with and now love it. Well, depends on who you ask. And now love it makes me really happy. As a first one myself, having watched the show since it aired on Channel 4 in the UK in the early 90s, on its release and buying the VHS tapes when it came out, which I still have, by the way, and also the complete series DVD box set, I can honestly say that's one of my favorite classic sci-fi shows. I should even go as far as to say that it is the GOAT of sci-fi, and as a massive Star Trek fan, that's hard for me to say. He goes on, but I'll leave it at that. Because he like calls us out individually. It's cute.
See, Rick, be like Mike. Be more like Mike.
Or just don't be Rick.
God damn it.
So Rick, our friend, well, I use that term lightly. Rick, our friend, has decided that he is going to one-star review us every single week. So if you want to suck it to Rick, give us a five-star every week, because I guess that's what's happening now. So we're going to get bombed or one way or the other. So help us out. And oh, by the way, Rick, you've been banned from the Facebook page. Have a nice day.
Tell your mom I said hi, Rick. I hope she washes your bed sheets soon.
Jesus.
Don't forget the sock under the bed while you're at it.
Oh, my God. I hope you're having a great day, Rick.
I want to point out, everybody, we're not mean people.
Yes, we are.
Rick actually asked to have this happen to him several weeks ago. We were nice, and we let him continue to be his Ricky self. But after the second one-star review, I feel we can, you know, beat him up just a little bit. I feel like we've kind of, you know, earned that right. So,
right.
And then Justin just took it to the nth degree, and I appreciate that, Justin, a lot.
I'm always here for you guys.
And for Rick, apparently. Oh, Rick's mom.
For Rick. Rick's mom.
Okay, on that note, I'm sure Rick will give me another one star. I look forward to it, Rick.
I can't wait to hear that one.
Go ahead.
On that note, let's go ahead and start talking about In the Beginning. And I believe Justin has a synopsis for us. Oh, what, Mike?
I was just going to jump in here really quick because I have a fun fact about the title of this that I thought would be neat to share before we jump in. This actually had a different title over in the UK. When this came out, this was called The Beginning, In It.
Oh.
But that was a joke just for our buddy, Mikey T1. Love you, bud.
Oh my.
Well, not even my fellow co-host laughed at that. I'm sorry.
We all kind of stared at you when you dropped that little gem right there. It was nice.
Where's our buzzer? Can we get off the island today?
Maybe I should repeat it. Would that make it better?
No. I think once is enough, buddy.
All right. I'll see y'all later.
My work here is done.
Wow.
Okay. Justin, would you like to read a synopsis for us?
Yeah, somehow I picture the Skeletor meme when Mike was saying that. So, yeah, that's fun. Anyway, In the Beginning, this is a 1 hour and 34 minute TV movie. It covers the Earth-Mimbari War in much more detail, including Delenn's involvement and the death of Gul Dukat. I mean, regular Dukat.
Dukat Light.
The end.
And every fanboy on every B5 and Star Trek page, their heads just exploded about DS9 and B5. We're not going to deal with that today, I promise.
Dukat Zero.
Wish version of Dukat.
Jesse doesn't even know who we're talking about. She's throwing shit out.
Timu Dukat? Yes.
Spoon-faced Dukat.
Damn it.
Okay, right. So we're going to dive into this movie. And as we've done before with the movies, it's kind of a free-range conversation because there's really no A plot, B plot, because it's not an episode. But where do y'all want to start in terms of... Oh, no, first off, obviously I need to do this first.
In the Beginning?
Oh, my Christ. It's going to be a long edit.
It's all my fault.
And who's the one that told us not to, you know...
No, it's all my fault. I am claiming it. It's just because I'm discombobulated. Okay, so let's go ahead and get into our first impressions on In the Beginning. And let's go to Jesse first. What are your first impressions on the movie In the Beginning?
I honestly didn't have a whole lot of hope for this movie just because the last one I didn't really love. This one was actually, it was cool. Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the extra explanation behind the Mimbari Earth War. I didn't know what was happening for a good solid like 20-ish minutes, but then it started to roll together, and it was kind of cool. It was neat to see, and yeah. Didn't hate it.
Emily, first impressions.
It wasn't as bad as I expected, but I think when we first started this series, I asked if the whole thing was basically about Londo fucking up and starting all this fuckery. And based on this movie, yes. B5 is about Londo and his bad decisions. So It was interesting to see him interact with children. That was very unexpected, but not terrible.
I can't remember who said it first. It may have been Mike, but I think it was called out like at the beginning of the show that this is Londo's story. So
yeah,
it's definitely Londo's story. Justin, what do you think?
I actually really enjoyed it. I think it was really interesting to finally get kind of the whole story of the Minbari War to begin with. And I like how they kind of tied it in with other episodes that we've seen, like Atonement and War Without End. And one question I kind of had that maybe you guys can answer for me is, did they film all of this from scratch, or did they use like a lot of unused stock footage to kind of fill in some of these scenes? Because it feels like we've seen some of this before in previous episodes, so I kind of assume it's like stock footage. But then also the stuff that we didn't see, like the behind the scenes from especially the Minbari side, I didn't know if that was all refilmed specifically for this movie, or if it was just like stock footage that they picked up off the editing floor.
You know, when I think about this movie, because I only watch it once or twice every, you know, few years, I always come back to this as the clip show movie. But when you actually watch it, there's not many clips in it. And according to JMS, only about 5 minutes of actual stuff that was pre-done in either the Battle of the Lion stuff with Sinclair is obviously lifted, because obviously they didn't have Michael Hare come back. The Atonement stuff with Delenn and Ducat were in there. And there's that one, blink if you miss it, the guy from Avalon.
Michael York.
Who's firing on him. But that's really about it for the clips. Everything else, they filmed.
Okay. That was one thing I was kind of curious about. And then also, I thought it was very interesting how Londo takes responsibility for his actions during the Minbari War and the consequences that it had. So, I mean, overall, just the finally seeing kind of step to step, almost like watching a war, you know, a war documentary about the savagery and the brutality of what that conflict really was. It was something that we've always seen clips of, but to actually see it play out on the screen was fascinating.
And we'll jump over to our first ones. Mike, your first impressions.
So this is like the original prequel, isn't it? It's like before Star Wars went back and did episodes 1, 2, and 3, we had in the beginning kind of showing us the beginning, the precursor to what Babylon 5 season 1 was. And overall, I really enjoyed it. I think it does a nice job of filling in some, you know, not necessary context, but it does a nice job of filling in context about kind of how the Earth Minbari War came to be and how it escalated and concluded ultimately. It does also add some highly unnecessary padding with little side stories about Sheridan and Franklin meeting each other and almost but not quite averting the whole disaster. Overall, I there was no point when I wanted to get up and walk away from it. It was pretty enthralling from start to finish.
Gavin.
This is the best movie, in my opinion, and I think a lot of fans would agree. For good reason, it fills in a lot of things and makes the whole story of the series a lot more clear in certain aspects. I like some of the actors that they utilize in this movie in different roles, especially the gentleman that played Lanon. I thought, you know, did a nice job. He had previously been seen playing the rabbi, and I think even one other part at one point.
He was the original, Epsilon 3. And then he couldn't come back.
Yeah, okay. I knew that.
Drawl,
yeah.
Oh, he was the original Drawl?
Okay. Yeah. He was the original Drawl.
So yeah, I like that actor quite a bit, and you know, of course she doesn't have a huge part in it, but Trisha O'Neill is in this, which is an actress that a lot of Star Trek fans will recognize quite prominently in one of the biggest lore episodes of Star Trek. But Robin Sachs is in this. You know, there's a lot of great actors that they brought in for this that really make it a very good movie. And I like some of the Sheridan stuff. I think it's really cool seeing some of his backstory that you really haven't seen a ton of, other than a couple of, you know, stray episodes here and there. You know, even Robin Atkin-Downs is in this, which we'll see him again, but I won't say anything more about that. This is a fantastic movie, and it really shows that they upped some of the production value for this too, because it looks great.
Like, I really like this one. This is probably either my first or second favorite of the original Babylon 5 movies, not counting Road Home and that, talking the live action ones. And honestly, it had some award nominations out of this too. It got an Emmy Award for makeup, helped contribute to a Saturn Award nomination, and a couple others for the writing on this. They were even thinking at one point it might have gone for a Hugo Award. So this is actually probably some of the better writing and work they put out with this movie. And I really do enjoy it. You can tell with the visuals they put in, the extra, normally an episode would run about 900,000. They gave them about 3 million to play with this. And it held up. Now, this is the first it moved to TNT. So when they, I remember when this premiered actually, because they did the, it was basically a 4-hour block, because the way they set it up on TNT was they showed this and then went into The Gathering and then started a whole relaunch of the whole series on TNT when it moved over. And really enjoyed that. I'm sure we'll get in. There's some interesting points with the ratings and stuff that this brought later and the promise that this had with the move over to TNT. But I really like this movie. The novelization was good of it, too, by the way. I don't know if anyone else, Scott, if you've read the novelization version.
I didn't, but I really like Peter David. So, and I see he wrote that. So.
Yeah. And honestly, The novelization fills in a lot of rounded out details, like the kids. It goes back to Knives, the guy that Londo killed in Knives. They were actually his grandkids. Are related to him somehow. So it really pulled in those pieces from there, expanded even more in the novelization. So I would definitely say, Justin or some of the other newbies, check the novelization out if you can find it.
If Peter David wrote it, I'll definitely give it a read. And that actually makes sense that you say that, Blake, because I was wondering why that lady and those kids were there. And if it's all related to the guy from Knives, it makes perfect sense, because Londo promised him he'd take care of his family. Yeah. So that again answers actually a question I had. So that's great.
Yeah, and that's kind of a known thing in the side canon, whether you read the novel or not, that that's Ursa Judo's or Jodo's or whatever his name is, kids. Not kids, because it's like 20 years in the future. So
it's like his daughter and his grandkids, basically.
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which,
even Londo is still being his usual Londo. He's doing some positive things while he's being his usual Londo. But no, I mean, I did a couple months ago back, I was on the Intergalactic podcast with Mike over there, not our Mike, but a different Mike. And I did the ranking of the B5 movies. And I said this was my favorite, and it still is. I think its quality is much higher than Third Space, the other one we've seen. I really enjoy how JMS kind of weaves a story that can be a pilot. And a lot of people say that when you start watching B5, you should start here. We didn't do that with you guys, because it does give a lot away, specifically about seasons 1, 2, and 3, but it also gives you a little bit away of 4 when talking about what happens with Sheridan. But even JMS says he would probably have people watch this first. So I like how he kind of weaves the story together. He gets a lot of different stuff in there that we've already seen, but as has been said already, he also puts in some stuff that we didn't know about, like the potential peace that could have happened, the fact that Londo is the reason why it got as bad as it did, and the fact that Jakar was involved too. That's the kind of stuff that only if you've watched the whole show does it really make sense, and also kind of ties stuff back. And I do like that it also absolutely ties into War Without End, with the Delenn and Sheridan in the prison too as well, which is, by the way, is another clip that they used. I didn't mention that one, but that obviously was lifted from War Without End. So yeah, I really enjoy it. Let's go ahead and dive in. And Blake, what do you got?
I was just going to pick up on what you were saying about the order of the movies, because you and I, when we started talking about this, had this same discussion over when should we put this one in particular, about should we do it up front? Should we wait till the end of season 4? And where to have this one fall in, because it really does set up a lot, but it also reveals a lot at the same time. And what's funny is, and I see Kevin's hand up, because once we looped in the other first ones and started talking about the movies, we had this discussion for a second time. So we really did kind of go around before we ever launched this on exactly where this particular piece was going to fall. The other ones were easy. This one, not so much.
Kevin?
Yeah, I just add to that I'm glad we did it this way. I really do think that it reveals too much. And it makes, I feel like it would cheapen the series a little bit if you started with this, you'd know a little too much. There wouldn't be quite as much mystery to a few things. And you're also going to see, you know, particularly the stuff with Londo, you're going to have a certain opinion of him way earlier than you should about certain things with him, because he starts off as a bit of a, you know, buffoon. And I don't think knowing for sure that he's going to be emperor from the jump is really how I would prefer somebody go through the series. That being said, on the grand scale of things that Londo did throughout the series thus far, I'm not even sure that this is really much on the radar screen. I know it was impactful, but at the same time, like he's under orders. He didn't know. There's a lot of other times when he did know and he did it anyway. This one, you know, not selling them arms, that's almost a non thing. I mean, he's protecting his own people, and then, you know, complete bad intelligence misunderstanding, you know, that led to tragedy. I mean, again, given his other crimes at different times, this is barely on the radar screen for me as far as his bad acts.
Jesse?
Honestly, from a newbie point of view, I don't think that if I had watched this one, I really would have retained a lot of the things that you guys are talking about. Because honestly, if you look back at The Gathering, I don't remember shit from that. I remember being pissed off that you know, there were several characters that weren't there, but I don't remember anything from that. And I think that if I watched this, it would be the same thing. I'd be like, what the hell is going on right now? Who are these people and what are the fuck are they talking about? So, I mean, I can see why you would want somebody to watch this, because it does give that backstory to a lot of the things that go on through, you know, the first several seasons. But I think either way it would have worked. So
yeah, and I also to what you all are talking about, I continue to agree that watching this first, to Jesse's point, I get that too, but I still think that there's some stuff in here that just does better when you've watched the first four seasons. Like, I think if you watch Londo, as he's coughing into his handkerchief, he brushes the keeper with his shoulder because he's trying to get drunk, as we know he tries to do, because we saw War Without End. So he actually brushes the keeper and you don't see it, but that's just going to be a move he does, unless you know from watching War Without End that's what he's got on him. The same thing, I like the little stuff, like Ivanova having one earring. And if you go back and watch the show now, she wears one earring the entire show. Hmm. So it's this little stuff like that you would not catch watching this first. Justin?
I was going to actually, I mean, kind of along the same lines of what you were saying, Scott, when I first watched that scene, I'm like, okay, so this is how her brother dies, for one. So we get to meet her brother. And then two, that was always something I noticed. So when she took off this earring and, you know, handed it to him and said, I'll wear this again when you give it back to me, I'm like, that's why she always just had one earring in. Okay. And so you get kind of some of those explanations. And I think they did a really good job of de-aging a lot of the cast for these different scenes in this movie. Like, they made Sheridan look really young. They made Ivanova look really young. They did a really good job of making, you know, and I guess, you know, makeup is the whole story of it, but they did a really good job of making everybody look like they were, you know, probably 10 years younger than what they actually were at the time. So, you know, it was actually something that, you know, I enjoyed seeing a lot of those nuggets throughout the entire thing. Now, in terms of, to me, yeah, I mean, to me, knowing Londo eventually becomes emperor isn't probably going to be a major spoiler for somebody watching the show for the first time. But I think a bigger spoiler would have been at the very end, where Londo's watching Delenn and Sheridan, and they're taught, you know, saying, well, they end up, you know, he basically tells the kids, well, they end up together. And then he's watching them and they're talking about their son. So then you can watch the entire series basically knowing that Sheridan and Delenn end up together and they end up having a kid. So I think that's bigger in terms of spoilery than Londo being emperor of the Centauri. One thing I kind of noticed at the end of that scene, though, when the girl's asking, well, are they going to live happily ever after? And he's like, well, that's yet to be seen. And then he's watching that scene. I'm like, oh, this is directly out of War Without End Part 2. And God, that's chilling, then, what he told that little girl. Like, that was like, oh, he did some good things in that and taking responsibility. But like you said, Scott, still being very Londo.
I'm going to toss it over to Blake, because we actually just talked about some de-aging in our Beyond the Rim segment a few weeks ago. So I'll have him bring that forward to the not Beyond the Rim now.
During a Comic-Con in Phoenix, there was a whole 25th anniversary panel with the cast. And Claudia Christian told a story about this one, where they were casting this movie and she went in one day and they had all of these pictures of younger actresses laid out that they were trying to look at for the younger Ivanova. And she basically is like, no bullshit, I'm going to be Ivanova. and said, oh, no, no, you look too old to be the age that it would. She went and got a picture of herself from when she was that age, took it in, and it was identical. They did not de-age Claudia to do this. She took in the picture and showed them that she could pull this off. So really, it was the change in hairstyle. Other than that, that was just strictly
give me Claudia. A bob cut and a second earring, and she's good to go. Yep. Yeah,
I was so sad her hair was so short.
Yes, hated it.
I thought she looked great. I
do not miss that hairstyle decade.
I thought she looked great, but I like shorter hair, so I guess it's just personal preference.
Well, I mean, she's beautiful no matter what, but right. I'm just not a fan of that hairstyle on anybody.
I do like how they filmed her, though, because even the camera angle is looking down at her a little bit to make her seem like she's younger.
Looks smaller. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're saying de-aging because, well, we're used to 2024. There ain't no de-aging in 1990. So, like, hey, let's put a little bit more makeup on Bruce to make him look a little younger. Let's film Ivanova to where Claudia, where she looks like she's 16 years old. I mean, that's the kind of stuff they're doing. It works.
So this is directed by Danny Vejar, who we talked about, you know, Danny or Michael?
Sorry, Michael. That
Vejar.
It's Michael Vejar. So this is directed by Michael Vejar, who we've talked about many times, is the one director, I think, on this entire B5 series who you can kind of spot his work the easiest, because he's the guy that likes to play with weird angles with his camera work and get real creative. And so I think that was a really nice touch. I caught that too, how in all those scenes with Ivanova and her brother, it's kind of being shot from the security camera in the corner of the rooms, point of view to try to make them look smaller. It actually makes me think that the actor that played her brother might have been a legitimate giant to
just to sell it a little bit more.
Yeah, to sell it more.
How'd he fit in the Star Fury? Kevin, what do you got?
It is a shame that they weren't able to use Claudia Christian more for this one. She was barely in it, but there's really no way to work in her character more than they did already.
JMS did get called out for that. It's like, you got a movie. Why don't you have the whole cast there? And he's like, most everybody gets maybe 10, 15 minutes tops, because you're going through so much stuff that you've got to kind of move quickly. So, I mean, I think Delenn gets the most, but even she is only there for about half the movie.
We could always debate what the biggest spoiler would be if you watch this first, and no one would be wrong. But I think the biggest spoilers do have to do with Delenn. Yes, the relationship with Sheridan would be one big thing, but just knowing her part in the beginning of the war throughout, and you'd feel very differently about her character. If you remember season one, there's quite a bit of mystery towards, you know, her character and the Minbari to a certain extent too, and that would all be gone other than the fact, like, hey, why does she look different later? So all of that would kind of be cheapened, I think, if you watched this first.
Yeah, I really don't see the point in it. I mean, I'll say this, as the first one with the worst memory of any human being alive, I went into this expecting this to be a clip show, as like Scott put it, to begin with, that would take us all the way up to where the new season was going to start. And I was, it kind of came to me after a bit, like, oh yeah, no, it doesn't do that at all. What it does is it drills deep into what is essentially a story setting plot point, the Earth Minbari War. And, you know, while it's interesting to watch once you have all of the context, you know, for it, once you know that it exists and it's something you want to know more about, trying to watch this up front just wouldn't make any sense.
I'm just telling you, from somebody that has no memory whatsoever, I would have been fine watching it first.
Same. I've already forgotten most of what we've watched so far.
Well, right. That's, I mean, the truth there is too, we're the four of us who have watched it before, we're biased. I would say more so even Kevin and Blake, because I know we've watched it more than even Mike has. So we catch all this stuff and we know all this stuff because we haven't just watched it one time. We've watched it. Justin, what do you got?
Well, I was going to actually pose a question to the group regarding Londo. And at the beginning of the episode, when he talks about how he takes blame for many of the deaths in the Minbari War, and he says, I think the exact quote is like, I know my sins and the price I'll pay for them. Do you really hold Londo all of that for being that responsible for giving the order to destroy the Narn ship, because even he said himself, he had no idea that that ship was actually on a peace mission. They were under the intelligence that they were running guns and, you know, weapons technology to the humans. And that was his mission, was to stop that exchange from taking place. Like when he was sitting there and once he explained kind of his role in the whole thing, and I was sitting there thinking, you know what? I really don't hold Londo responsible for that, because there was no way for him to really know. So I was just kind of curious if anybody else kind of agrees with Londo that his hand's covered with blood, because I really don't think it is.
At least not for that reason. Jesse.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, Justin, I love your very sweet spirit. And it's you're always so willing to give everybody 17 chances. I do not believe for one second that he would have given a shit whether it was actually carrying guns or not. I just, like, he can say it all he wants to, but if we know what he did, like, there's been many times that he's killed, you know, millions of people and been like, it's fine.
Well, and that's true. I'll take that, you know. But take it, I guess from my perspective and analyzing what his actually role specifically was in the Minbari War,
right.
Like I took that, you know, what he did on Narn and all the other horrible crimes that he committed, I took that out of the perspective and I just looked at it from,
got it. Yeah.
Would he have known that this was actually a peace mission and not running weapons like he was told it was? Yeah. You know, how many times in war have armies and people made mistakes based upon faulty intelligence that they had? Many, many times.
Do you think he cared, though?
I think he cared, because in that scene where he said, I know my sins and the price I'll have to pay for them, he actually, to me, looked regretful in that, like, he felt like he bared a great responsibility, because if he didn't care, he wouldn't have bothered expressing remorse for the role that he had. So I think on a level, he probably, once he found out the truth of what actually happened, I think he did care. Now, that doesn't excuse him from all the other things. One thing I did really enjoy when he gave the little boy the emblem to wear and said, you know, you're emperor for the next 5 minutes or whatever the case may be. And he said, what do you want? I kind of chuckled a little bit. And then when the boy said, tell me a story, and the mom was trying to, like, admonish him, and he's like, no, don't worry about it. He handled that question a lot better than I did. I flat out laughed. Like, I was like, true. You know what? And that again, to me, shows remorse. Like,
reflection, right?
Yeah. He knows he fucked up.
Right.
And he knows he made a lot of mistakes. And I think part of a Londo character is not exactly expressing remorse, because there are some people who believe remorse is irrelevant because you can't change the past. So, like, if he's sitting there like, you know what, he can't take back anything he did, so he might as well not, you know, wring his hands and cry over it, but just accept the faults he did and accept the sins he committed, and knowing that he's going to have to pay the price for those sins. And to me, I think it's just, even if not remorse or showing regret, but just acceptance of all the evils he committed in this entire story.
Right.
Kevin.
The other thing I'd say too is remember where his position is in the Centauri Republic at this point. He is not high up. And
he's a nobody.
You know, I was under orders. Now, I don't want to have a big discussion about, you know, what you're responsible for when you're under orders, but just remember, he is not the guy that we know in season 3 or season 4. This is 10 years before. Yes. So his position's completely different than the one we're used to seeing him in.
Yeah, he's a low-level diplomat.
Right.
So, like, otherwise he wouldn't have been assigned to a backwater called Earth, because he even, correctly labeled Earth as a backwater planet in an uninteresting system. And so he was kind of sent out to Anchorage, Alaska, to kind of hang out for a while. And if there's anybody listening from Anchorage, I love your state. I know some good people from Alaska. They're all great people. I know many people. They're great.
There's good people on both sides.
Yeah, there's good people on both sides. But that's where, kind of, to me, that feels like Londo's in that position where it's like, you know what? I'm stuck in this backwater planet of these primordial apes and have to make the best of it.
Well, and Londo because there was that scene in season one where there was kind of a flashback, and that was Londo with, why am I being punished? Like, it was not an assignment that was worth having. He was sent there because they just didn't want to deal with him.
I like to think that Londo screws up even more in the 10 years because he also thinks that B5 is completely a punishment. So, maybe Earth is like this rung, and then he does something else to get him about three more rungs down before it's all said and done. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, not to, I guess, drill into this point, but we were raising the question of, why would Londo care? And I guess I kind of thought through this myself watching it, because it was surprising to me when he said, I didn't know that there was a secret peace talk potentially going on, and that's what I was doing it for. So I thought to myself, like, why would he care whether he, sent them on this mission to blow up the Narn cruiser or not? And, Londo's the guy who is for the Republic first and foremost, even at the expense of his own conscience. So at the end of the day, I looked at this and I thought, well, the Narn are about to sell the humans a bunch of guns made from reverse engineered Centauri technology. Mm-hmm. We also know the Centauri have never wanted and are basically afraid of tangling with the Minbari. So yeah, I mean, it made total sense that if he was told, keep those former Centauri guns out of the humans' hands, so the Minbari don't think we're somehow involved in this, he would absolutely have done whatever was necessary to protect the Centauri Republic. That's the Londo who he was at that time and still is.
That is a fantastic point, Mike. I didn't even think of it that way.
Justin?
Well, and what I was thinking, piggybacking off of Mike's comment, is the Londo that we saw during those scenes and in the beginning has a very different viewpoint, I believe, of the Narns than the Londo sitting in the Emperor's chair. So, like, would Emperor Londo make the same call, make the same decision? I'm not sure.
Justin, to your question too, I really, and this was actually called out by JMS and others on the Usenet forums, is Londo's story specifically in this, but also throughout the show, is very karmatic. And the fact that he's kind of paying for his sins, and then when you think he's all paid up, he makes some more and has to pay some more. So I do like that throughout this process, you get to what was just said, you get the Londo of 10 years before the gathering, but then you also get the Londo 19 years after where we've seen him right now. And I do love the fact that through all of this, it's all been mentioned, he sees Centauri Prime as his other wife, and he's always cared for her and done everything for her. But what you don't understand, unless you've watched War Without End Part 2, is when he is toasting Delenn and Sheridan, who are in prison at that very moment, and he's saying, to the future, my friends, you know that he's going to let them escape, and that he knows Jakar is there, and that he is getting drunk to kill himself through Jakar. We know that because we saw that with him strangling Londo. So in Londo's mind, he is toasting a future that he will not be a part of finally. And I think he truly believes that a future without Londo is a better future. And that's why he's toasting to the future and to his friends, because he's saying, I'm out of here, and now hopefully you can fix the shit.
Yeah. It's especially a better future for the Centauri without Londo, because they won't have an emperor with a keeper controlling, I don't want to say everything, but enough.
Yeah.
Long live Emperor Veer.
Which we've seen already. Veer picking up that same thing the kid had. Veer picks it up. So, I mean, it's as much as you can dog on Londo, at the end, at least the end that we think we've seen so far, at the end, he's making the right choice. And that is a choice to free his people and free himself. Mike.
Yeah, so segueing off of that then, the thing that I really appreciated and simultaneously lamented, I really appreciated that we got to revisit old Jakar. Old mustache-twirling, villainous, petty douchebag Jakar, who was prepared to jump in when the Centauri let the hurt humans down to really stick it to the Centauri. And then the part of that that's the flip side for me is the fact that we didn't get to see old Jakar in this movie at all. And I really wish that he had shown up at some point at the end to kind of, once again, like, cement that bit of timing between this movie and War Without End Part 2.
I completely agree with you, Mike, and I love that we get old Jakar, but I do think you get a little sprinkling of the Jakar to be, because just his excuse is like, look, we've already were slaves. If we all die anyway in this process, we're still free.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's definitely old Jakar, but you got the tingling of, okay, he's thinking about now what he wants to see his people be. Of course,
he definitely has a more noble edge to him. I will agree with that. But at the end of the day, like,
yeah,
he basically puts it in writing, like, I'm doing this because eventually it's going to come back to haunt the Centauri, and that'll be awesome.
That's true. I think if you look, because to Blake's point, when this was first aired, and I remember watching it too that night because I was excited that TNT had it taken over, is of all the characters, I do think Jakar makes the most easy transition from in the beginning to the gathering. Because when you see Jakar, he's kind of the same guy. Everyone else is a little different, especially dealing with a different makeup. But the transition's a little easier with Jakar. Jesse, what do you got?
I think just seeing the old Jakar, even as old Jakar, because I have all the backstory of Jakar, I still had, I think, a little bit more grace for him. Like, I still thought, like, okay, well, I see why you were who you were, but, like, I'm still willing to, I guess, forgive it, which is kind of weird because, you know, in the first season, we were all like, Jakar's a fucking asshole. Like, what, you know, F this guy. And now, like, Jakar holds a very special place in my heart. And it's funny to see him in that old light again.
Look at you forgiving somebody, Jesse.
Just not Londo.
Right.
It's not Londo. Fuck Londo.
Justin.
Well, and I guess, to me, I guess you see a little bit of the noble Jakar in this because he's perfectly happy to go along on this peace mission and try and help find a way to end the Minbari War. Now, is he doing it for his own reasons? Probably. Like, to me, it's, you know, screams that, and even what the, God, I can't remember who actually said it, that Jakar is just doing this in order to help build a closer tie between Narn and Earth. But I think that, yeah, he may be doing it for his own reasons, but the fact that he's, like, put himself at great risk in order to help bring an end to the war still shows a little bit of nobility, even in old Jakar.
Yeah, that's a good point, Justin. And we don't know at this point if Jakar is a part of the Kari, the leading force of the Narn, but he's definitely going to be like a high-ranking official.
Yeah,
and to put his ass on the line.
I actually caught that. I feel like, I could be wrong, but I felt like there was some line of dialogue from him to one of the humans that he was working with that he basically stated that he was not part of the Kari, would go talk
that to he'd have to okay. speak to the Kari and yeah. try and there get them. So
you could be saying, like, I'm part of it, I got to go talk to the other dinguses, but maybe not. So I don't know.
I think because that's when he was trying to close the weapons deal, right? And he's well, this is going to cost a pretty penny. And there's like, well, here's a blank check, fill in the numbers. And he's like, well, I'll have to talk to the Kari and get their approval. So to me, it kind of felt like at that point, he wasn't part of the Kari yet.
That's how I read it.
Yeah.
But, that deal probably got him promoted.
I feel like there's no way he'd be on Earth if he was part of the Kari at this point.
No, he's part of the Kari when he was on B5.
Yeah, but that's a little different. They've got communication set up.
That's true.
For, yeah, like, this is a backwater planet. Why would a member of the Kari be on there? I just, that doesn't sound like...
As much as they're backwater, we have established at this point that, like, the humans are the heroes of the Dilgar War. So they're up and comers.
Yeah, well, that's what Londo calls out in the gathering, too, is the Earthlings are up and comers. Now, of course, they get a little speed bump when it comes to the Minbari, but the idea is a lot of these races are trying to latch onto them. Because even it gets called out in this, that they had just signed some kind of accord with the League of Non-Aligned Worlds after the Dilgar War. So I agree that Earth is not the powerhouse that it will be in, like, the series we're seeing and all that, because obviously they have to rebuild after the Minbari War. But I think they're still seen as somebody who is, you need to probably be aware of and be latched onto, not so much like a backwater as a, you know, an up-and-comer. The one thing I wanted to throw out there too with this, when we're talking about the whole weapon sale and everything else, Londo says one of my favorite lines of the entire series, and the arrogance and stupidity all in the same package. How efficient of you. I love that line so much. Justin?
Yeah, and Londo was definitely Londo at his prime with that we saw in The Gathering, you know, very cocky, one-linery and stuff like that. One thing I want to touch on was kind of what Londo was talking about at the beginning with how prideful humanity was. just coming out of the Dogar War, you know? And if you think about a lot of times back in human history, especially when a massive winning nation just won a big war, humanity is going to be very prideful and they're going to come out with their BSDs winging in the wind and everything like that because, you know what, we just won this big whole war. And they are, you can tell even from the behavior of the Earth Alliance generals, they feel like they're on top of the world and right now. So we just beat the Dogar and we'll beat these guys too. Even Londo said the quote that he first learned amongst the humans was pride goeth before the fall. The one thing that I really like about this entire movie, and while probably definitely when I'm going down through a rewatch, I'll watch it again, is just how completely catastrophic and savage the entire war was, where I think it was Londo said that one thing that he admired about the humans is we just kept fighting and we didn't give up. And when we ran out of ships, we used guns. And when we ran out of guns, we used sticks and knives. And it was just, it just gave a whole gravity to the situation about how this is, you know, you're potentially seeing the last gasp of an entire race.
Justin, to your first point with being basically cocksure after doing so well in a war, I just think of Douglas MacArthur in Korea. That motherfucker thought our shit didn't stink. He's like, I can just nuke North Korea and China. What's the matter? We won the war. We're fine. Thanks,
Coming
Douglas.
Out of World War II, the U.S. Army was very cocky, and we got humbled in Korea for sure.
And then we didn't learn, and we got humbled in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
It took us several different generations to figure out that, oops, maybe we shouldn't do that. Mike?
This did raise an interesting point. To go along with that, you know, they made a big deal out of the fact that humanity never took out an enemy capital ship, and they were never able to kill a Minbari warship except for Starkiller. And they also then in this movie pointed out that it took 2 years for the Minbari to make it across the universe to Earth to the Battle of the Line, and I don't understand how or why it would have taken that long.
Yeah,
that was discussed too, and take it or leave it, but here's JMS's excuses on it. One, and also you see that another ship takes out a capital ship by ramming it.
Yeah.
JMS says, well, that's not a victory, and the whole point is Starkiller Sheridan has a victory because he survives. But also, I think it's kind of, what he says and what is the dialogue tries to say is the Minbari were not going full on towards Earth. They were trying to weaken the Earthlings as much as possible, picking them at different points. And like even the whole Sheridan thing, when we hear about Sheridan fighting off the capital ship, the Black Star, I think it's what's called Black Star, or yeah. Dark Star, whatever it was, that's in the solar system. That's in the asteroid field around our solar system. And of course it then takes longer for them to come to Earth. So it gets drawn out a little bit, and I don't know if the dialogue helps it enough to kind of explain that away.
Well, it's interesting because if even if it doesn't feel like it entirely makes sense, it does actually put a little bit of color on the Minbari side of it, which we hear a little bit of too from characters like Talen about basically how bloodlusty the Minbari got. They were playing with their food, and to that end, you know, their bloodlust got out of control, and they fought until the point that by the end, a lot of the Minbari weren't really convinced that they were that into it anymore.
Well, going back to Vahar directing, one of my favorite shots in this movie is really quick that shot where you have the human being tackled by the Minbari with that knife going into his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, that is so visceral, the way it's shot and the way it's handled. I was like, ooh,
well, like I said,
definitely rough.
And it really puts a different color on the kind of uptight, proper Minbari that we see so often through the rest of the show. And then, you know, we kind of get these little unveilings of like, yeah, they're not as special as they think they are. They're not as classy as they think they are. Like, they like to get down and dirty and give in to their impulses just like everyone else. And you're getting a little bit of that here.
And Dukat calls that out when he's talking about the classes, and the warrior class is looking for something to do. And we actually see that in the show, because we have that one ship shows up that's still wanting to fight the fight because the warriors didn't want to give up. It was the workers, which we don't hear about in season one, and the religious caste who both say, yeah, we need to end this thing. Justin?
Well, and the That whole scene that I thought was actually very good as well, with that, you know, the one-on-one hand-to-hand combat between that Mimbari and the human soldier, was just illustrating Londo's point of, for all of the technology of two spacefaring races, at the end of the day, the entire conflict devolved back to spears and swords. It's at the end of the day, you're still killing another living being, and it just illustrates the savagery of it all. Like, it's, you know, war as you know, as it said, war is hell.
Oh boy, this is so timely because as we're recording this, you know, it's been 1 week since the Fallout TV series just concluded, which if you haven't watched it, it's
It's
fantastic.
good.
It's
It's
really,
really
really
go back
good. I need to watch it.
And you know, there's the famous line in Fallout is war. War never changes.
And
Here you have two advanced spacefaring races stabbing each other with knives.
the way they get that quote into the series, by the way, Mike, I won't talk about it, but damn.
Chef's kiss.
That is the best video game adaptation I have ever seen. If you haven't watched
Definitely one
Fallout
of
yet.
the top two.
Yeah. And Justin, your point, another good show that kind of gets to the visceral nature of, like, you can be pew pew in space, but you're still just killing another sentient being. It only lasted for a season, but Space Above and Beyond is a
Oh
really good show.
yeah, that was a great series.
And it was also it came out from Fox, so of course Fox canceled it early, so it really ends on a
They
cliffhanger.
never do that.
R.I.P. Firefly.
Right.
Exactly. This was well before Firefly. This actually came out when
Yeah.
B5 was still a thing, but
Was it what, 98 or 99 when Space came out?
yeah, for those listening, if you go check it out, I think it's you can catch it on YouTube now, but it's a
Yeah.
very good show that was only in one season, but same idea.
And our friends over at Yum Yum have been doing
Yes.
a series on it, so you can go check them out.
Absolutely. The Yum
But
Yum
yeah,
Podcast.
very good show. But yeah,
Hey,
Fallout
Ryan.
Jesse got it. He listens. He'll be like a little giddy in his chair in Australia.
our little resident thirst trap known as Ryan.
Jesus. So we kind of mentioned him a little bit, but I want to pivot a little bit to Sheridan. And the reason why I want to do that is I dogged on Sheridan a lot in season 4 specifically, and how kind of annoying he was in cases. Not as much as Emily dogged, but I dogged too.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I
Yeah.
absolutely love Sheridan. He
Sure you
didn't
did.
annoy me at all. I wasn't hoping he'd accidentally fall out the space lock.
Sure you
Don't
did.
you talk about Baylan like that.
That's
Oh, you're.
Sinclair.
I wouldn't say that about Sinclair.
I'm just defending you from the fanboys, Jesse, before they come a calling. This is where the Sheridan that I remember, the Sheridan that's a good captain, that isn't a dingus, that actually has an ethics that I really appreciate and is just strategically smart. This is the Sheridan I remember in this movie. This is the Sheridan that I like. So watching it, I was like, oh, there he is. He's been hiding. There he is. Justin.
Well, and one thing that I kind of caught from that entire thing was when they first wanted him to be a part of that expedition to Mimbari space, and how close Sheridan came to not being part of the story. He came very close to dying. Even the general was like, okay, fine, you want to shoot your own career in the foot, go ahead. And then, of course, he redeems himself with his actions aboard the Lexington.
Well, I think that's smart writing by JMS too, because you assume, oh, here's where Sheridan becomes the war hero. Nope. He
Yeah.
takes a little longer, Kevin.
At the risk of ruining something for Justin from the novelization, I think it's really important that we talk about it here because it's a really interesting point. So that captain that he didn't want to serve, that Sheridan didn't want to serve with, Jankowski, so he acts like a complete moron, starts a war in this, and they also allude to something called the Omega Incident. And what
Yeah.
that talks about is some sort of unjustified attack by Captain Jankowski on a Dilgar ship that directly led to the Dilgar War. So he didn't just start one war. He
Oh, that guy
started
caused it.
two. Yes. They cleared him of any wrongdoing for the Dilgar incident. My guess is if they had lost the war, they might have felt a little differently about it, but whatever. Sheridan knows about this and is like, I don't want to serve with that guy. And I like my current captain, and I don't want to leave him in the lurch either. This is a great opportunity, and I'm sorry, I don't want it.
Well, I look forward to that because I just ordered the book on Amazon, so I'll let you know what I'll think when I read it. But it's amazing how victory can erase a lot of sins. Yeah.
Mike.
Well, and boy, was that guy. I mean, let's talk about that scene. you know, where the war begins, and how eager that captain and his first officer were to go out there and collect them some new medals aboard the USS Yeehaw. it was not lost on me that every one of those crew members that spoke had a southern drawl.
Oh, Jesus.
Sorry.
You can send your hate mail to Great17Podcast.
I didn't script it that way. I'm just pointing it out.
Well, you know, in this, we talked about real life correlations and everything. This is what scares the shit out of me, is it only takes one asshole
at
the right time. I mean, I go back to like the Cuban Missile Crisis. Imagine if one of those ships that were, you know, staring down Russians, which they weren't technically actually staring down. They were several miles away, but whatever. Imagine if one of those ship captains decided to fire at one of those Russian ships.
Yep.
It just takes one asshole.
I mean, there have been a lot of incidents over the over the course of history where things have been averted by like a single person who was like, should I do that?
Well, there's the one case, and I'm blanking on the name, so I'm sorry, but there was a point where the Russian nuclear infrastructure almost launched because of some pigeons. And one guy in a Russian silo is like, I don't think this is actually a launch. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was he received the order. It was like,
that was similar, where we've almost had nuclear war with Russia, but someone actually used brain cells and was like, yeah, I don't think they actually launched anything. I think that was an error in the system.
And in this case, the dude got demoted for it because he didn't follow orders. So,
yeah.
And thankfully, we're all here alive to talk about this.
So imagine if it was Captain Yeehaw.
And then a German punk band wrote a song about it.
That is literally the most Russian army story I've ever heard in my life.
So we've talked about Sheridan. We've talked about Londo and Jakar a lot. Let's talk about Delenn a little bit. And I want to hear from, to use the Cole phrase, a Delenn stan, or at least she used to be. Emily, how do you feel about Delenn in this show?
It was actually really interesting to get the backstory on her a little bit more than we've gotten before, because you get a better sense of how she started out. And I still find it interesting that in that moment, they did want a response from her, and they took it so literally.
Right.
No one stopped to think, does she mean what is coming out of her mouth, or is she just angry when she is kill them all? And they're like, okay, sounds good. We're going to go start that shit.
Right.
And then to see her kind of go back more how she was, more like calm, collected, thinking things through. But that, I still find that fascinating. Like, she is freaking the fuck out and you're going to ask her for some sort of like rational answer. And then you're going to assume this is actually a good answer and she means it.
When 2 seconds before they were like, she's not even allowed to talk. She hasn't been through the ceremony yet.
Well, it's that was several years, and that was several years later.
Right. But it didn't look like it in the show. So
yeah, the timing of it made it seem closer together. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's, I mean, we had this conversation with a Tellman. I'm not going to rehash it.
Right.
But I still believe whether she meant what she said or not, it was her responsibility. She was the deciding vote. Believe what you want. She made that vote. Now, as we see, she's also the one who solves the problem at the end after several million people are killed. But she does solve the problem.
2 years, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, so I still think Delenn, much as we talk, is Londo responsible? Delenn is absolutely responsible for what happens here.
Yeah. Justin.
That is not an argument I want to rehash at this
point. I know.
Yeah, and I won't get into the... Is Delenn responsible or anything like that? I won't get into that whole can of worms right now. But, you know, to me, the interesting thing is, and I think a lot of the evolution of Delenn's character over the course of this movie was the fact that, yeah, she was the one that gave the green light and the go ahead to start the war. But then very quickly, you kind of see a change in her where she doesn't become, at that point, the strong Delenn that we know right now, but she's very much somebody who is very, I know this is wrong. I have serious objections with this. But at that point, she felt powerless to stop it. Where she even said, this war has taken on a life of its own, that there are many, herself included, but there are many, even like Lenan and her were talking about it, about how, yeah, what they're doing is wrong and we're no better than anyone else committing a mass genocide against an entire race and stuff like that. But at that point, she felt completely powerless to do anything about it until she discovers that Dukat had a secret the entire time. and he was hanging out with Kosh and Kosh 2.0, as it turns out. And once kind of Lanon turned her onto that, and then she found out about the Vorlons now being involved and been having contact with them, probably for who knows how long Dakot's been talking to the Vorlons.
I'm glad you brought up the whole Kosh and Olkosh. That, of all the stuff that, like, oh, we've seen this, we know how this happened. If you've watched the series, this, that's the one I think that is actually a reveal for everyone watching, that the Vorlons were that engaged from the beginning, especially the fact that we see both Kosh and Olkosh together. And we do know that Olkosh becomes the ambassador to Minbar and Kosh becomes the ambassador to B5. So it all kind of ties together a lot with that. So I love that little nugget that if you've watched the show, it does pay off something that you haven't seen before. Blake?
Just to pick up on the discussion about Delenn and the kill them all moment, I'm going to start this discussion over with this one. I don't think you can throw this all on Delenn, because this is where I get into where I don't like Atonement. This is the part where I get into why I did not like Atonement, was because it puts the focus on Delenn, but leaves out, I think, a whole bunch of the backstory and the rest of the story with it. Because in this, you've got Lanon and the Rangers, who are considered a joke at this point. And they're out there talking about this prophecy of this ancient enemy. They need to get ready to fight this enemy. And you've got a warrior cast who is basically being told they need to prepare to fight prophecy, which most of them are taking to be false at this point. And you've now got this scenario where you have an enemy that they can see, an enemy they can actually go after. And yeah, Delenn is the one who yelled, kill them all, go after them. But it's the warrior cast who took the Earth-Minbari War and gave it a life of its own, really going after humanity to a point that even, I believe, because it was one of the warrior cast members on the council was even like, this is getting to be a little much. And because I believe Moran was a warrior cast on that, if I'm not mistaken, and was even like, this is getting to be a bit much with this war. So that's, again, why I don't like Atonement, is because I think it puts it all on Delenn and Atonement, but leaves out the role of the warrior cast and how much they really zealously took into this for having an enemy they could fight versus the warning of the Rangers and the religious cast of these enemies who were prophecy and legend, not something they could see at the time.
I get what you're saying. The one thing I would say to kind of back up Atonement a little bit is with Atonement, it is all in the eyes of Delenn. So I think that same Delenn puts the weight on her, whether she should put the weight on her or not, that she's doing it. Where I love that in the beginning here, we get to see the narrator who's not Delenn. We get to see the whole story. But I still like Atonement. But yeah, I hear you. Kevin?
The other part of that too is she was powerless to do anything for 2 years. And she says this thing took on a life of its own. If she was really that responsible, she would have been able to back it off at that point and say, you know what, I made a mistake, let's not do this. And the warrior cast at that point is just running rampant. So that's another point that I would agree with Blake, that I don't see it as all being her fault. I'm not saying she's blameless. I'm just saying it's not.
Holy shit, we've agreed like 3 weeks in a row now. This is weird.
I know, yeah. It's scary.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like okay. It when I agree with Scott or Blake, but whatever.
I'm uncomfortable. Please stop agreeing.
Emily is uncomfortable. It's fine, Kevin, because I'm going to disagree, because at that one point, she's the deciding vote. At the rest of the time, she's a part of a council. If the whole council is the military machine saying, we're gung-ho, and you've got two worker class members who are like, yeah, fuck the humans. Doesn't matter what the religious caste wants. They're still moving.
That's what I was just going to say, too, is Delenn may bear responsibility for lighting the match, but the thing at that point, she's just part of the council. And even if you assume that the other two religious cast members are going lockstep with her, there's the warriors going all in for the war, and at least two of those workers are yep. continuing to push for it too. So
as right. I always told folks when I was on a school board, count your votes every time. If you don't, well, you're screwed.
Something the current speaker can't seem to do very well.
Well, technically, he did, finally.
Well, finally, he did, but...
He did that very well.
There was all those other votes that didn't go very well.
You mean Speaker Hakeem Jeffries? What? Because yeah. He's Speaker right now, folks.
Please let them vacate the chair.
Yeah. The other thing I want to say about the Vorlons is you're saying that they're involved. It's like, how involved are they? They're just standing there being mysterious and not really saying anything, not putting a stop to anything.
Mm-hmm. As they did for half the series?
Well, true. But, you know,
they're the watchers.
You would think they would have the power to affect a change if they wanted to affect a change. I get why they don't, because it already happened before and it's going to happen again, all that stuff. Yeah. We don't want to do a time.
And the Minbari had to affect the change. The Vorlons couldn't do it.
The one thing that Kat does is he said, what's going to Zaha do right now? Let's check it out. The Vorlons don't stop him because they know it doesn't happen. They're like, go knock yourself out, Dukat. You're going to be dead in 12 hours. Have fun.
Jesse, did you want to have a time travel discussion at this point?
Nope, sure don't. Started reading that book and got about 5 pages in and shut it and set it back down.
Best Christmas present ever.
Oh, yeah.
I've said this before, but it's been almost a year now. Another show everyone should watch who's listening. On Amazon Prime, The History of Time Travel. It was made by a couple college students, and it still is the best time travel movie I've ever seen. And Jesse, I think you'd appreciate it, honestly.
I am surprised that when we had the live recording that we did at Kevin's house, I was half expecting Jesse to show up and just tomahawk that book at my head.
I would have paid money.
That'd have been worth the price of admission all by itself.
Right.
So anything else y'all want to discuss before we move on? I mean, I don't know if this is going to have much, but if you have any questions or predictions, we'll do that now. So newbies, we're going to ask if you have any questions, predictions, based on what you saw within the beginning. We've already done our predictions for season 5. If you watched or listened to our live last week for the season 4 recap, you've seen that. So we're not going to do that again. But any questions or predictions lingering after watching in the beginning? Jessie is shaking her head. So I'll go to Jessie first.
No.
Cool. Excellent. Emily.
Nope.
This is going to be a great Beyond the Rim, guys. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Justin.
Do hot dogs still exist on Babylon 5?
And if you were a hot dog, would you eat yourself?
Wait, yeah, but if it is a hot dog, is it a sandwich?
Oh, no. No, it is not.
And that's a whole special episode all by itself.
For special people.
And when do we learn sandwich. Where Monkey Man Bartender comes from?
Yes, that's what I wanted.
I thought he would be in this.
Well, since we'd have no questions or predictions, and this is going to be pretty easy. The one thing we forgot to mention, or I forgot to mention, that I really do appreciate, and Kevin, you hit on the actor already. When Rachel Garrett is the president of the Earth, I love.
That was Rachel Garrett?
That's Rachel Garrett, yeah.
Yep. Oh, I did not know that.
Captain of the Enterprise C.
Yeah.
But I just,
and the voice of the computer and Gene Roddenberry's wife and all that stuff, yeah.
No.
That's Majel Barrett.
Sorry. Rachel Garrett is the captain of the Enterprise C.
Yesterday's, I was thinking Majel Barrett when you said that. I know who you're talking about now. Yeah. I apologize.
But I just want to give her a shout out. Blake, Kevin, you already mentioned her, but she does great as the president. I love her two speeches that she gives, especially the one that's basically like, yeah, we're going to die.
Well, we're fucked.
And maybe a couple hundred people can survive, so we need all of you to support that.
I literally had goosebumps on my arms, like her reading that speech and all of them sitting there completely dejected. And then one by one, as she's talking, they get up, get their gear, and move out. And that to me was the most moving scene of the entire film.
Yep. I just JMS threw this out, and I think it's still says something today, which is kind of sad that 30 years later this is still a thing, but he chose that to be a female president because he felt that it seemed stronger coming from a woman making that speech. And the fact that she is saying we're gonna lay down all of our lives to maybe save a few people.
Yeah. So every 10 minutes you allow a few hundred people to get off planet. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and literally we're just talking. I mean, and they got a few colonies at this point, not as many as they do in the series proper, but we're literally talking about everyone laying down their lives for a couple thousand people, if we're lucky. That's it. It's rough.
Blake, I was going to talk some behind the scenes and ratings stuff with this, particularly in the move to TNT. Kevin, did you have something more on the episode before I did that?
No, that's okay. I was going to make a dumb joke. You go ahead.
Okay. So we'll skip Kevin's dumb joke and go right back in that.
He's honest.
So I just wanted to touch base a little bit on, this was really when Babylon 5 moved over to TNT, and no one was quite sure how this was going to work out, because TNT at the time was the home of professional wrestling, and they were wanting to try to grow an audience. So they put the money in, they brought B5 over, they did these movies, and TNT set kind of a ratings base where they said, this is the best you're going to get. And they pretty much blew it out of the water with the ratings that they got on this. And JMS, from what he said, is when the ratings came in, not only was it running ahead of where they said it was, every quarter hour it went up. It tripled its regular audience, and every quarter hour more folks tuned in. So this just kept building the audience. It really set TNT up to have this audience come in. And then somewhere they decided to mess with it, because then it started getting with the preemptions, with trying to use wrestling. And then what they tried to do is pair it with wrestling so that the audiences would watch both. And what they found out was the WWE crowd didn't want to watch Babylon 5, and the Babylon 5 crowd wasn't really sticking around for WWE either. So they had this, they had it set up. It could have really worked.
They can't all be daywalkers like me.
But Mike, no, I mean, the one that they marketed to.
Yeah.
I mean, Blake, you said too. I mean, I remember as a kid in high school getting excited because I had watched B5 and it was so damn hard to watch it because I would miss episodes because it was preempted by basketball or PTEN, which wasn't really a network, would air on the Fox station at like 11 o'clock at night, and I didn't catch it because I didn't see the TV guide. So it makes sense to me that when it moved to TNT, at least in the beginning, it had a huge audience because all of us who have been watching on this bullshit network of all over the country knew for months that at 7 p.m. on TNT, on a real cable station, it's on. And so everyone tuned in. It was like, oh, we know what it's going to be on, and we're all can watch it at the same time. This is great.
Well, and so they did this in 98, and it wasn't that long after this that, because Sci-Fi Channel passed on getting B5 when they went shopping it for season 5. Sci-Fi Channel passed on it, but it was 2 years later when they shopped another movie, which we'll get to after the series. But Sci-Fi picked it up at that point for the rerun rights. Why Sci-Fi never jumped on it in 97, 98 is baffling.
Yeah, I still don't think, I mean, yes, in a couple of years, Sci-Fi will become the Sci-Fi we know before it's Sci-Fi. I still think Sci-Fi is such a relatively new network that I don't think they had the money for it.
They were backed by Scripps, though. They had the money.
Well, but we talked about this earlier. Their first real scripted show came out like 6 months to a year after B5 moved to TNT. So we're still on that cusp. And don't forget, TNT is Turner. They got the Turner money, especially back in the late
90s. That's a really good point.
That man paid for Gettysburg, dude. He can pay for anything.
Yeah, I was just looking to see, like, the first real Sci-Fi Channel original series that I remember was, it wasn't SG-1 because that started off on Showtime. It would have been
Showtime.
Farscape.
Yeah, we had this conversation in Beyond the Rim, and now I'm going to go back and look.
That was 99. So
yeah, I think the first like real scripted. Blake, you're right. It's right on the cusp, but I still think Sci-Fi Channel, which was a spinoff of USA, still didn't have the real money that TNT brought with Turner. I just think it was, and also JMS did flat out say that there were some higher ups at TNT who were B5 fans. And they put their necks on the line to do this, which is why, to Blake's point, when in the beginning and The Gathering, because they aired back to back, did so well in the ratings that they were, as JMS put it, dancing in the streets because it paid off. Now, how it goes, we'll discuss, but this will lead, these movies will lead to a season 5 that we were not supposed to get. And they will lead to a spinoff series, which we've alluded to a couple times now, but...
And other movies.
Well, another part for the Sci-Fi thing, because I was just looking at it too. At that point, they had a 50% stake was owned by Paramount Viacom. And there's probably a good reason Paramount was like, yeah, fuck this.
Maybe not, yeah. Like,
Paramount still was in their fuck this mood about that at this point.
Awkward. The other thing on that too is, Blake, did you just kind of say that we have to watch that Sci-Fi movie? Is that what you just said? We'll talk about it later, because I'd rather not.
I said we'd talk about it. I didn't say we'd watch it.
Okay, just throwing it out there.
We would talk about it. I never said anything about watching.
I need some elaboration when you're done.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, kaya,
pretty bad.
Oh,
by the way, everyone, I'm doing punch images here, and if you've watched that movie, you know exactly what I mean.
Still have no fucking idea what you're talking about.
Jessie has her hand up. Jessie, hi, how are you?
Hi, I have a question. The fact that it's taken me 4 fucking episodes or 4 seasons to get to this point kind of concerns me. But okay, so Scott and Mike were friends from high school, correct? Yeah. At the time that B5 came out, yes?
Yeah, but we didn't talk B5.
Okay, well, that's fine.
That's true.
I understand why you two watch the same show. How the fuck?
You think?
How did we get to a point where we, you and Blake, are at MIG and are like, hey, by the way, I used to be a Babylon 5 freak. Hey, me too. And Kevin joins in like, yeah, me too. How the fuck did we get three people 20 years after all of this happened? No. Oh, no.
So I can explain for Kevin and I.
Yeah.
Kevin and I worked together. And
so you were watching it as you were working together.
No, because the series had already ended at that point. But we would hang out socially and I had the DVDs and I believe I noticed Kevin did two or one of the sets of them. And so we got talking about it and there somehow.
No. I had never seen more than the UPN promos for the show. And I had not seen much of the show at all. In fact, the only memory of seeing this show that I have is the episode where they're stuck in hyperspace and they're searching for a ship in hyperspace. I remember I probably had that episode trailer on one of my TNG VHS tapes that I taped myself.
Yep.
I didn't know a lot about the series, but Blake, you talked me into watching the series at that point. So I did not watch this organically in the 90s. I watched this probably 2001, 2002, somewhere in there. It would have had to be after the DVD release, which I don't know exactly what year that is, but it was right in there.
So to be fair, it was not 30 years. It was like 10 years when we all met.
Yeah.
Ish. How the hell did we get from Scott to Blake? Because you two were like the driving factor of, hey, we got to get all of our friends to watch this show. How did you get there?
Because we were nerding out one night, like, hey, that's a good show.
Yeah, I mean, we were nerding out, and it turned out we both watched it in the 90s.
Yeah,
and you have to understand, like, Jesse, as we've both said, Scott and I have talked about doing this podcast.
Right.
It's at least 2017, 18.
Yeah, well, because remember, just much as Kevin and Blake worked together, Blake and I worked in the same office years later.
Okay.
So we saw each other daily as well.
And then 20 years later, here me and Emily and Justin are. You're all welcome.
Well, and how that came to be, in case we haven't talked about it, is I literally put out a call on Facebook and said, hey, friends, who wants to do this? And
I remember.
Assholes signed up.
It seems like 100 fucking years ago at this point, but I do remember that.
It was this time 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, and how I ended up getting involved is because Kevin and I were roommates in college, and then Blake was kind of a third roommate to some degree. So, like, the three of us would sit around and hang out a lot and watch TV, cook burgers on the grill, drink. Blake would violently vomit all over my kitchen. I mean, good times were had by all.
Jesus.
But
he's not wrong.
Hurricanes. Oops.
Only happened once.
Blake and Kevin kept talking to me about this series that they were watching called Babylon 5. And I think, Kevin, you were kind of in the midst of watching it, but I didn't really express any super interest in it or anything like that. And then there were kind of times over the years, both Blake and Kevin would be like, dude, you need to watch Babylon 5. And I'm like, I've got other things going on in my life right now. And then finally, when Scott posted that on there, and then Blake and Kevin are like, hey, yeah, you should do this. I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. You know, I'll finally do it. You know, after it literally took about 20 years of Kevin and Blake bugging me to watch this fucking show in order for me to sit down and watch it. I kind of regret that I didn't do it sooner, because this is probably one of my favorite series of all time.
Awesome. And Justin, I'm just going to say, I've only ever projectile vomited twice in my entire life, and both times your wife was present.
Ex-wife. Which is why every time I drink a Hurricane, Blake, I think of you.
So, Jesse, it's a crazy little small world after all.
It really is, because I'm sitting here thinking, how did these two fucking nerds get on this topic?
When you're nerds, you find fellow nerds.
You find your people.
Here I am. Right? Like, I get it, but I just wondered what bar this happened in.
I do like that you assume that Mike and I talked B5 in high school. Mike and I did take time to write down every single starship class we knew from Star Trek on a pad of paper once.
Yeah.
And then we went over to a buddy's house and we recorded, before podcasts were a thing, Mike, you may not remember this, we recorded just an audio story we made up about dilithium crystals and stuff. We recorded a, like an audio show that I don't think exists anymore.
Fucking nerds. I love that.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
The funny thing is, I was friends with them at some point during some of this.
Right.
I knew none of it.
And I know that you three, right, knew each other, but you're a newbie. So I was like, well, she clearly was not watching the show, but was putting up with their shit anyway. So
this is true.
Yeah, it was a rough
time. We were too busy in what's his name's basement watching The Postman.
Oh my God.
That sounds like a story time for a later day. Nice.
Yeah.
Still a good movie. I stand behind that movie.
What movie?
Okay. Yeah, you were there. Ignore it. Okay, so
I was there?
Probably.
Yes. 100% sure. Yes.
I have no idea.
Memory sucks.
Emily, we keep things that are very important to us from our childhood.
That was not
so important. Just let's move on.
Yeah, there's like nothing from my childhood. Right. We're good.
Emily let that trauma go a long time ago.
Right.
Yes.
No, it just resurfaces in different forms.
Amazon shopping? What?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go ahead.
Hey, I hope this all stays in.
Most of it will. We'll go ahead and end it there. I think because we don't have any questions and predictions, we'll go ahead and skip on the Beyond the Rim. I think we've covered most of it here. If you think that was not smart, you can throw in the comments what you think we missed, but with spoiler tags, by the way. But we're not going to do a Beyond the Rim this time. So we'll be back next week to discuss episode 1 of season 5, No Compromises. Guys, we are not including a few extra movies sprinkled in. We are 22 episodes away from the end of Babylon 5. We are in the final season. So we'll be back next week. So until next week, remember to click all the links. Join us on our conversations on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And also, if you can, join our Patreon. We have a Discord going that has both a general discussion area and a Beyond the Rim discussion area if you want to talk spoilers. And again, a big thank you to our producers who are listed down below, who are our Gray Council members on Patreon. And we will be back next week. Thank you so much, and leave a review. And until then, I'm Scott, and with me has been...
What?
Justin.
Emily.
Kevin.
Mike.
And Jesse.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, okay. Will my hot dog question ever get answered?
No. Is it a sandwich? That's the real question.
It's not.
What makes it not a sandwich? It's two pieces of bread between and meat.
Between it's one piece of bread with it's, a slit cutter.
Yeah, it's the connective tissue.
Yeah, unless you get ballpark.
If it, then suddenly it's a sandwich.
Yeah, if you break it in half, like a sick son of a bitch.
Then it's a defective bun.
That's is a ballpark taco a buns. Sandwich? That's the real question.
Well, and then there's like, if you've ever gotten a hot dog from Freddy's, they come on this like weird mutant rectangle. It's like a loaf of bread that they've cut a slit down. It's
oh,
fucking
yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Sandwich.
Hot dogs are white trash tacos.
I might have eaten two before we came to record tonight.
Don't consider anything with a bun a sandwich, and I'm just weird that way.
Well, that takes
well, out of hamburgers.
What
sandwiches.
Makes you weird?
No.
Yeah.
Hamburgers are sandwiches.
No.
Yeah.
How not?
Not in Kevin World, they're not.
What are they then?
Kevin World's kind of flogged if you haven't noticed.
What is a burger then to you?
I'm literally just throwing shit out there.
Christ on a crutch. Okay.
No, right, I'm actually going to go with Kevin on this
Christ
one.
On a crutch,
hold on. I need answers. What would you consider a burger if it's not a sandwich?
I don't know. It's its own thing. I think a sandwich has
not
to
a sandwich.
Have...
It has to be sliced bread.
Oh, fuck.
You slice the bun in
a bun is sliced bread,
but,
bro.
But what
bro?
About like, yeah, but then there's like ciabatta bread and stuff. Like,
I don't want a PBC.
Yeah, no. If it's a bun, it's not
it's
a
over
sandwich.
Now. I can just cut this whole fucking thing off. I don't have to edit
no,
it.
No, leave it in. This has to be our outro. This has to be our outro.
You serious?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know.
I think he's going to find something a lot more interesting from our discussion just now to have an outro for. But
if you're still listening, the word is hot dogs a sandwich.
It's not a word.
The phrase is hot dogs a sandwich.
Secret phrase.
The secret word is hot dogs are not a sandwich.
Hey, that's like
leave your comments below.
We had a baby. It's a boy.
Yeah.
God, that commercial.
And make sure to leave all of your hot dog pictures for Jesse.
No.
Rick, no.
No.
No, Rick, no. No means
and
no.
And that's how Jesse got bombarded with dick pics. Have a good night, everybody.
That's pretty.
He likes to color them, not to see them.
It's pretty clear that he wants to send those dick pics to John.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay.
Remember that meme of all the hot dogs hitting that girl in the face? That's what I picture
that's
right
exactly
now.
Exactly what my inbox is about to look like.
Actually, a really good YouTuber.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and on that note, I'll bid you adieu. Good night.
Go get that mushroom, Jesse.
And Nicole missed this.
Oh man, she's gonna be pissed. We didn't talk about Sheridan and Delenn enough for
Yeah,
fine.
I don't either, but Nicole will.
Oh shit.
Good times had by all.
Oh fuck.
Aren't you glad you were here, Blake? Come on.
Sure. Another quality discussion here at Gray 17.
I don't know what thing you were watching, but I thought it was fantastic.
Me too.
Thank you for listening to Gray 17, a Babylon 5 podcast. You can find all the places to listen to and watch this podcast at anchor.fm/Gray17podcast or youtube.com/Gray17podcast. We want to hear from you, so join the conversation at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or Patreon. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review where you are listening to or watching this podcast. Gray 17 is not affiliated with, and the podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by Warner Brothers or any other owners of the Babylon 5 copyright. All clips included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. The opening and closing themes are available from Falling Matter on YouTube.
And what's out there?
The rim.
And beyond that?
The truth.
Ah, arrogance and stupidity all in the same package. How efficient of you.
Are you still here?
We have always been here.